First in news, first in talk. When you want to know the details, you can count on News Talk K57.
Buddy, you're a boy, make a big noise, playing in the street, gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace, kicking your can all over the place, singing, We will rock you. Buddy, you're a young man, hard man, shouting in the street, gonna take on the world someday. You got blood on your face, a big disgrace, waving your banner all over the place. Somebody better put your bag into your place. We will.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of Vet Talk on News Talk K57. My name is Sean Watts. I'm the Adjutant Quartermaster for VFW Post 2917. Adjutant Quartermaster for VFW Post, or I'm sorry, District 6, which is Guam and Saipan. Adjutant Quartermaster for VFW Department of the Pacific Areas. Good evening. We are trying something different this week. Due to the P-Corps 1 that we're under, we don't have anybody in the studio except for Isaiah. Isaiah, how you doing tonight?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Thanks for putting this together so we could try this Zoom thing for the first time for Vet Talk. I appreciate it.
Hey, I try. Thank you.
All right. So we have a guest on with us tonight. We have Miss Joanne Brown. Welcome to the show. How you doing?
I'm doing fine, Sean. Thanks so much for having me on and being able to juggle things. I know with this whole P-Corps 1, it kind of changed our original plans, but thank you for having me on this evening.
Oh, it's great to have you. Won't you just go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself and why you're on the show with us tonight?
Well, after quite a number of years, I mean, my last election that I ran for was about 16 years ago for the Guam Legislature, and you know, with all the challenges that I see going on in leadership these days, I just become, you know, dissatisfied with what I'm seeing in the leadership direction. And I thought rather than simply complaining about it, you know, I would throw my hat back in the ring and run again for the Guam Legislature.
Okay, so 16 years ago when you ran, were you running for senator, I take it?
Yes, I did, actually. I think except for Congressman Underwood, who ran a couple years earlier than I did, back in, I think, 1992 when he first ran for Congress. Probably politically, I'm the oldest, second oldest candidate running. I first ran for the Guam Legislature in 1994 and served 6 consecutive terms and then stepped down after that. So yes, it's quite so many years later that I'm actually surprised, but nevertheless, I think there are changes that need to be made in the leadership direction in the Guam Legislature and the check and balance and what I'm seeing of corruption in the government that really, really bothers me. Even though I know I'm going to get attacked or criticized about those things, I think at the end of the day, you need to do what's the right thing to do. And it's one of the reasons why I'm coming back. And I think the only way to do that is you have to have, or at least our people need to have different options of candidates to select from. I certainly do bring a lot of experience back to the table. And I also...
Oh, I think we just lost her.
Yeah, we did.
We lost her. Okay, hey, there she is. Hey, right, Joanne, okay. We lost you for a second.
No problem.
Okay, with what you were just talking about, you said that you've been dissatisfied with what you're seeing in the leadership of both, I take it as the legislature and the governor?
Well, I think the legislature needs to ensure a certain degree of check and balance, and I've not been seeing that with this current legislature. I think a lot of issues that the legislature should be raising and keeping an eye on, they have not. They've been very silent. And then, of course, as we are, the fact that we are going through such challenging times with this whole COVID situation, I think the legislature could have been a lot more responsive a lot earlier on this year. especially with regard to the budget, which they're doing with now. And then, you know, I'm just hearing today that they changed the process of requiring like 6 votes in order to put an amendment on the budget bill. I mean, nonsense like that. That really, when we are going through such challenging times, I think we need to have a more open and responsive government so that people have comfort, because there are difficult decisions that have to be made right now with what we're going through, what we're going to be going through in the months ahead and the next year or so. And more the reason everybody puts their hands and their heads together to make good decisions and make them publicly, where our people can see what's going on and know that, you know, their leadership's being responsive to their needs.
Well, you brought up the budget, and which we always love to talk about the budget on this show.
Sure.
And this is a Vet Talk radio show, so I'm going to kind of ask you a couple questions about the veterans.
Okay.
How do you think the veterans fit into the current budget, and how would you go about doing something with the budget for the veterans?
Well, I don't know how much they've appropriated, but, you know, I'm not a veteran myself, Sean, but my dad, my late father, was a retired Navy Chief Petty Officer of Boatswain's Mate. So I was raised in a military family. My dad was also a combat veteran. He served in Vietnam in the Riverine Force, and he also was 100% disabled veteran. So in terms of being a family member, you know, I have immediate familiarity with being a family member of a veteran that served our country. So there's always going to be a very special place that I would have for veterans. I do know there's, you know, many of our veterans still out there that have benefits that they're eligible for that they perhaps are not aware that they can apply, or maybe to get that assistance that they need. I do know when my father was applying to get his disability benefits, it was a very challenging process. I mean, it's like he had to put a packet together like 3 different times because they would misplace it, or when he'd follow up, they couldn't find the information that he submitted. And, you know, all those things had to be sent back to Hawaii for review. Right. So it was quite a challenge to go through all that. And it's just, you know, assisting him with that process. And I know there are other veterans out there that are eligible that perhaps, you know, don't know what they need to do or need the assistance, because, you know, there's a lot of federal money that's brought in to and it has been brought into our community, and more certainly that can be brought in primarily to assist our veterans that are in need. And I think those are things that I would look at. I'd want to see what our office is doing to help out, because, you know, that little assistance is going to make a big difference for our veterans out there. But, you know, just economically in our community, the amount of money that brings in is a benefit to our people.
All right. And since you said that the veterans bring in some money, do you know how much money the veterans bring into to Guam every year?
I have no idea what the total is, but I'm sure it's substantial. I mean, just from my dad being a Navy retiree, receiving 100% disability, and certainly my mom now is a survivor who receives benefits from that, you know, just in our own household, I'd have to say that that's, you know, you multiply that. And then, and more importantly also, it's just the services that our veterans need, and you know, especially medically as you're getting older. Even just going through the evaluation process in order to receive your benefits, you know, having to go and go through the examinations that are involved, sometimes repeatedly in some cases, to determine whether or not ailments, unfortunately, that result from service or service disabilities that come up over time. You know, our veterans need to be able to go in and get that type of evaluation in order to even be eligible, you know, to determine.
Joanne.
Yes.
I asked you a question about how much money the veterans brought into Guam, and you didn't know. I'm going to go ahead and take care of Johnny for him, because Johnny normally, he loves this question.
Okay,
it's 57,
I'm sure it's substantial.
Yeah, it's $57 million.
I believe it. It's a substantial, like I said, just from my own experience working with my dad, for him to get his benefits, you know, that's just a single household. So I can't imagine you multiply that with all our other veterans. I mean, we have such a large number of veterans on Guam. So yes, the amount would be substantial. Now I've got the number, $57 million.
Yeah, $57 million. And we talked earlier about how much the budget was for the Guam Veterans Affairs Office this year. That is just under $700,000. I think it's currently at, I think, $618,000 right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a number that we've been saying on this show for many, many years is that that budget should be $1 million every year.
Well, you know, and those are the kind of things you look at. I mean, there's never going to be enough money for everything the government wants to fund. But there's certain areas, of course, where we're investing that dollar multiplies, and definitely investing in our veterans multiplies those dollars here on the island. And by all means, if our veterans are eligible for federal benefits that are out there, we should be doing everything we can to get that assistance out there, because that benefits the veteran in terms of their quality of life, their medical care that they're going to get. But then it's also an added benefit to our economy, because that's money coming in that otherwise would not be coming into the island.
Yeah, exactly. And what you're talking healthcare, you know, we have the VA community-based clinic up in Aganya Heights, just outside the Navy base. Mm-hmm. They were supposed to break ground on that place to expand that January of last year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And now here we are, you know, we're almost more than halfway through this year. Yeah, I think, you know, we understand the bureaucracy of things, but those are the kind of things certainly you'd want your local leadership to be following up on. And you know, everything can't happen all at once. I think we all understand that. But I think we all want to see incremental improvements every year towards our desired goal. And as long as we're seeing that kind of progress, or we're kept informed and knowing where things are, knowing that people are on top of these issues, I mean, that does give you a certain degree of comfort. But, you know, if things are just sitting around and you're not getting any answers and you're not seeing any real effort to pursue it, then that doesn't get us anywhere.
Right. And you'd also talked about that your father had to travel to Hawaii to get medical care and everything else.
Just the paperwork process when he was filing for his disability. You know, it was a very cumbersome process, and we did get some assistance at the time. Fred Gofigan was in charge of the Veterans Affairs Office, and we had other you know, former retirees in the community that were also assisting, that volunteered to do work to help veterans, mm-hmm. especially with the paperwork side of it, and meeting what are the document requirements that they needed. And of course, you also had the follow-up medical appointments that were needed to verify, you know, the type of illness that you have, and did that type of illness qualify for service-related disability. So, you know, that took several years and a lot of frustration. I mean, my dad's not, you know, his style is very much, you know, he's not into wasting his time with things, and it was very frustrating for him because he liked getting things done. And this was, gosh, maybe I'm thinking maybe 16, 17 years ago when he went through this process. You know, it was challenging for him, and we knew people that could assist with this. But like I said, I'm sure there are others out there that are not aware of what benefits they are eligible for. And even if they were, it's like sometimes even looking at this process, it's complicated. I mean, they don't make it easy for people to sit down and fill it in and do what they need to do, and then ensure that there's some follow-up so that, you know, they know that they're going to get assistance.
Yeah. Okay. And let's go back to the budget here for a second. With the COVID-19 that is ravishing the island, it started back in March, basically. Then we opened back up. Now we're locked down again to PCOR 1.
Yes.
The economy is tanking.
Right.
What would you do if you're elected a senator to help the economy and bring us back up to where we need to be?
Well, I think we're going to need to provide some assistance to the private sector. I don't think we can continue to operate like this. And as you're seeing, almost on a weekly, daily basis, you're hearing of more of our local businesses here that are shutting down. I think we all understand the importance of trying to be as safe as possible. I mean, that's understandable. You want yourself to be safe, certainly your loved ones, your friends, your family, and our community. But at the same time, we need to balance that. If we continue to go the way we're going, a lot of these businesses are not going to be able to sustain themselves. And then what are we going to have? We're going to have another major problem, and that's where we're heading already, where we're not going to have the private sector, which actually generates the money that this government benefits from substantially. When you cannot have as large a sector of our private economy as we've had since March, with the tourism industry literally come to a total standstill, have 35 plus thousand people unemployed, and not think there's any significant consequence to the government budget, I don't believe that. There's no numbers they're going to put in front of me at this point that's going to make me believe that that's even possible. And then this idea that the government itself is taking care of itself. I mean, I don't see any budget cuts that are being put in place to address this impending significant shortfall that we see ahead of us. Even with all this federal money coming in, there's limits to that. I don't think the federal government's going to be able, on a continuous basis, to put in the kind of money they've been putting into Guam. And then you've got people that are unemployed. I mean, they're, you know, fortunately are starting to get their unemployment checks, but that's not, you know, that's not going to continue. And then we don't have our people working. It's not just the money coming in, but having our people working. So, I mean, we need to look at the BPT, even though people say, oh, that's going to reduce the money going into government. Well, you can't have the government that's intended to protect the interests and serve the interests of the public taking very good care of itself. And then such a large block and sector of our community that's out there that's unemployed and struggling and not doing anything about it. You know, I think you need to balance your approach to how you address these issues.
Yeah, and I guess my question was, because right now Guam basically depends on tourism for money coming into the island. And right now it doesn't look like we're going to have any tourists for the foreseeable future, probably even not until sometime next year. The question I was trying to get an answer of would be, do you have an idea of bringing different businesses in that doesn't rely on tourism to help bring our economy back up?
We can certainly look at that. I know the Chamber has proposed different things related to insurance and other type of offshore businesses that can come in from Asia into, you know, a U.S. territory where there's political stability and you know, can operate from that sense, because certainly I'd want to see clean industries on the island, and I think we definitely can look and pursue that. I mean, we're in the midst of a worldwide pandemic. We're not isolated from it. It's not something that we're going to be able to shift from very quickly, because we're going to be going through challenging times, because it does affect not just Guam, but the entire world. And we've never been through anything this sustained for this long a period of time in modern history. So I think those are other options to look at to bring revenue into the island. And I think this is giving us a good reason why we need to build upon those other opportunities. But where we're at right now and the resources that we have to deal with, I think we need to go back and seriously look at the how we're operating the government and where we can tighten and where we can assist the private sector to sustain our private sector partners. Because, you know, government is very good at spending money, but the government of Guam doesn't generate money. I mean, it charges people fees and taxes, but it's the private sector that generates the money that we depend on in this government to operate.
Exactly. And I had a question for you, and it completely slipped my mind just now. That's what it was. When you were senator before, did you have any veterans that were working in your office?
Let me quickly think. No, I don't think so. Let me think quickly. Yes, I did. I actually did. I did. Actually, the late Mayor Ben Gumatautau, who just passed away last January, was a retired Navy man as well. Him and my dad got along very well with their shared history in the Navy. So yes, I did. For the majority of my term before he ran for mayor of Petey, he worked in my office. So I would say probably the six terms I was in, I think Uncle Ben was in my office about maybe four or five of those terms in office.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what... what would you do for the homeless vets that are on island?
Well, I think we need to look at what programs are available. I'm glad to finally hear that, you know, our government's looking at how they can assist the homeless population. I mean, that's going to be a growing number just with what we have here on Guam and just the migration of people that are coming into the island. Housing is a challenge for a number of people. But I think we need to look at what programs are available to help fund and assist so that we can address and again help those veterans that need that assistance. Some for it could be medical issues, mental issues, abuse issues, you know, that they may be going through that has kind of taken them off the mainstream. But again, those are outreach programs. There's no doubt there are programs that are available for that. I think we need to look at what can we do to do better outreach so that we can get those people that need the assistance and get those veterans that need the assistance. And that's their choice. If they don't want it, at least that option is available for them, and they have some comfort that that assistance can be provided should they desire it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's see. We talked about the budget. We talked about the CBOC. There's been talk of, you know, well, we talked about it on the show here a couple of weeks ago, that they're wanting to put a veterans hospital here on island. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think certainly if it can be put in place and it can assist as many veterans as possible, because I know in the past that's been the challenge, is being able to get the appointments, getting the type of specialty care some of our veterans need. I mean, even those that need prosthesis, for example, and other assistance like that. Certainly, I would be supportive of a new veterans hospital and, you know, knowing what programs that they have and how they can better assist, because before there used to be a long waiting line. you know, for veterans to be able to get timely appointments and be seen.
Call into the studio. Hang on. I'm trying to just got a phone call. Just real quick, Isaiah, are we having a problem with the phone lines? Try to call back in.
Okay, I'll give it a shot.
All right. No, there's somebody wanting to call in to ask you a question. So we'll see if we can get that to happen here. And I'm sorry, I didn't hear quite too much of that response, but that's okay. I'll go back and listen to it later. And somebody said that, you know, we really need to have our own regional office here on Island.
I totally agree with that. I think we have a large enough, well, you know, not compared to the U.S. mainland, but you know, per capita, you look at our, you know, the amount of veterans that are in our community is quite substantial. And of course, all of us want to be able to have those services available and having it set up here. I mean, those are things we certainly can work with our congressmen to advocate for. So that those services, particularly, I mean, for a lot of our people, and a lot of our people as they get older, don't want to travel somewhere else. You know, they want the comfort of home. And if that assistance can be provided for them here, and the medical care certainly can be provided for them here on Island, I think a lot of people would really want to see that.
Yeah, right. I'm trying to see if Tom, okay. We're just gonna go ahead and go to the phone lines. We had Tom on line one. Tom, how you doing?
Pretty good. Yourself?
I'm doing great. Glad you could get online with us.
Yeah, it's sort of confusing. I'm old school, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, we won't get into that.
we won't get into that. You know, guy in his mid-70s, we won't touch that. Joanne, it's Tom Devlin. Can you hear me okay?
Hi, Tom. Yes, I can. Good to talk to you again.
Yes, nice to talk to you. I can't see you, but I can talk to you.
That's okay. You know, we can still hear each other.
Doing the veterans issues for so many years and talking to various elected officials, both Republican and Democrat, what I would like to see on both sides of the aisle, regardless of who's the majority, minority, whatever, I need your feedback, how you personally feel. I'd like the various senators to send a representative to the Veterans Commission, you know, when things get back to normal, whatever normal will be, once a month.
Sure.
So they get an idea of what's the issues of the veterans community, how the veterans actually feel, good, bad, or indifferent, about the issues, about their elected leaders. I think in the past, this is before the, you know, pandemic and whatever, very few political leaders send representatives to the Veterans Commission. There's probably three or four that sent, you know, people there.
Yeah.
And I just like to get your feeling, and I'll hang up and turn the radio back on.
No problem. I appreciate the question. You know, Tom, when I used to be in the legislature back in the day, I mean, I had oversight over natural resources, and if I could not attend myself, you know, I'd have a key member of my staff attend so that I could be kept, you know, up to speed with issues that were out there. And I certainly will tell you, if I'm reelected into the next Guam legislature, if I'm not there myself, I definitely will have a key staffer attend your meetings on a monthly basis to be able to make sure we have our ear to what the issues or concerns are. I mean, we can't solve everything probably all overnight or all the time, but definitely my eyes and ears and my time is always open to listening what you have to say. Like I said, being a family member of a combat veteran, you know, there's always going to be a special place that I have, you know, because of my dad and his service to our country. So my door is always open to you, and I will make that commitment. Just let me know when your meetings are scheduled, and like I said, if I can't attend them myself, I will make sure a key member of my staff is present.
Okay, I don't know if you're aware that they just had a hearing for to change the public law about the commission and how it's made up and everything. Were you able to listen to that? Or
no, I was not. I mean, I've heard some of the controversy that has come with this, but no, I've not. I've not heard what the changes to what they're doing with regards to the composition of the committee.
Well, one of the people, there was four people that testified for that, and I'm not going to mention any names because the names really don't matter. But one of them said that the time for the Veterans Commission here on Guam was pretty much outlived its usefulness. And I'm paraphrasing. I'm not going to say exactly what they said. And they wanted to get rid of the Veterans Council or Commission altogether. What would be your thoughts on that?
You know, I mean, if it's something that the veterans want, I don't see any reason why we can't have it. I think, you know, the veterans on Guam are a significant part of our population. I don't have a problem with the veterans having their commission and continuing to have it operate. I mean, simple things like back in the day, I mean, you know, I'm actually the original sponsor with the late Senator Tony Blaws for the veterans license plates that we have here that our veterans have. So, you know, my awareness and advocacy goes back a long time. But I have no opposition. I don't see any reason why we shouldn't have it. I think you guys have a very important place in our community, and I think it would be important to hear what you have and what issues you have on concerns out there in our community or things that are affecting our veterans population. More the reason we should be able to hear what you have to say.
Okay. Well, we have about five more minutes before we hit the top of the hour. Talk prior to the show, I do have another guest that's scheduled to come on after the top of the hour.
Sure.
I don't know if we have any other phone calls. I haven't seen anything come across the screen here. But you want to go ahead and wrap this up for this particular session and give us a quick little out brief, or, you know, a couple. I'll tell you what. One more question is, What would be your top three things that you want to do if you're elected into the Senate?
Well, definitely, I want to look at the budget of the government of Guam. I want to definitely look at how we can reduce costs with regards to that. I definitely want to ensure more accountability in how our government operates to serve our people. And the third most critical and important thing on my list is addressing government corruption, because I don't think you can build a responsible, transparent, and accountable government when you have activities that are misusing the resources of the people. So definitely coming into the legislature, if I'm fortunate enough to get reelected, those are the key things that I would focus on. And as I said, you know, I'd mentioned to Tom, I'll certainly be there to be an advocate for veterans issues should I be elected back into the Guam legislature.
Okay. Again, I'm going to give you a couple minutes to go ahead and say what you want to say. Then we'll hit the top of the hour and we'll break for the CBS News.
Well, again, Sean, thank you very much for having me on the show tonight to be able to talk with you and also listen to your concerns. And thanks to Tom for calling in and relaying his comments as well. Even though I'm not a veteran myself, as I mentioned, I do come from a military family. My dad's a retired Navy chief. And so I kind of grew up you know, experiencing what it's like to be an immediate family member who's someone who served and who served in combat. And I know many of our families out there have experienced that. And there are challenges and concerns that come with it, especially as our veterans get older and have health issues and are in need of additional support and service within our community. That is something certainly I'm concerned with and would be an advocate for should I get elected. And as I mentioned earlier, I think just accountability in our government, addressing the corruption that's happening in our government, and ensuring that our government is responsive to our people and transparent with how we use the public money and the resources of our people. And I think there's a need for that. I think there's a need for more responsive government. I think there's a need for check and balance that has not been there for quite some time in this current legislature. And I will continue to be vocal about those issues should I have the support of the people to get back in.
Okay, that's great. Well, I really appreciate you zooming in for the Vet Talk radio show here on K57. This is a first for myself anyway to do this via Zoom. And we wish you the best of luck.
Thank you very much. And again, Sean, thank you for having me on this evening. I've really enjoyed talking with you.
I've enjoyed having you on as well. And with that, we're going to go ahead and break for the CBS News. This has been Vet Talk on News Talk K57. We'll be back right after the CBS News.
KGUM, Hagatnya, Guam. News Talk K57.
Yeah.
Good evening. Welcome back to Vet Talk on News Talk K57. My name is Sean Watson. I'm a member of the VFW. Welcome back to the show. All right. The first half of the hour, first part of the show, we had Joanne Brown, former senator, running for senator again. It was nice to have her on. We're waiting for the next guest to join in. Show's being done remote tonight. I'm actually sitting at home zooming in to do this, so we don't have any video on any of the platforms, but we do have the audio. My understanding is it's up and working now, so we're on the Weather Channel on both GTA and Docomo. News Talk K57 on Facebook, K57.com, PNCGuam.com. Isaiah, am I missing anything?
Hello. No, no.
Hey, how you
You're
doing?
You're on the radio dial of 96.5 FM and 570 AM.
Oh, I missed those that time. Thanks for getting me. We do have another guest that's going to be coming on. We're going to have Admiral Mannone coming in. As soon as he joins the Zoom chat here, we will have him on. And until then, I'll go ahead and take care of some announcements. The VA Pacific Islands, I got a message from them since our last show. They finally have their community-based health provider taken care of, and it's exactly who we thought it was going to be. It's what are they called? Westpac. It's the same people that were doing it before, so there shouldn't be any surprises. I think all the contact numbers are the same. And due to the current outbreak of the COVID on island and us being on pandemic core of readiness one, the CBOC is still doing telehealth. The VA office up in Teason is still closed. So those are not working very well right now. With that, let's see. I got a message from the director of VA Pacific Islands. The emergency care only for face-to-face appointments at this time, and that's on Oahu. I don't think that there's any travel. So if anybody was traveling off island to go to Tripler, I think all those are on hold unless it's absolutely an emergency. A few reminders, if you do happen to get a face-to-face appointment at the CBOC, make sure masks are required for everybody. We ask that you practice physical distancing at check-in and waiting areas and exam room. So that means leave your mask on. Special measures and instructions for people who may have or who have or may have COVID. See, ask before you come about telehealth and virtual appointments. Only patients are allowed in the facility at the time. So if you have a healthcare provider, they will have to wait in the car. And with that, I would like to welcome Admiral Mannone to the show. How are you doing tonight, sir?
I'm good. I hope you can hear me.
I can hear you just fine. Hi, Isaiah, how's the Admiral coming through? He's good? Okay. Isaiah, you there? Anyway, Admiral, it's a pleasure to see you again, and actually this time without a mask on, because last time you were on the show, you had a mask on for the whole time.
Well, I'm sitting in my quarters tonight, so I figure I don't need to wear one here, though I might get COVID from the dog. Who knows?
Well, they said animals don't transmit it, so I think you might be okay there.
Yeah, well, I probably should put it on because that thing smells pretty bad, though. So, so how are you? Thanks for having me on.
It's always a pleasure to have you on the show. I know that you had a message that you want to get out to the veteran community, so I'm going to just turn it over to you and listen to see what you have to say.
Okay, so I absolutely appreciate y'all having me on the show today. You know, it has been a while since the last time I was on. I think it was in May when we were under PCOR 1 the last time. And the message during that show, if you remember, was why we were doing certain things on the different installations and what our decision calculus was, because there was a lot of angst. And I took it on myself at that point to acknowledge that we didn't communicate as well as we could have in the early part of COVID, early in March. And then obviously with the Theodore Roosevelt coming in, things accelerated and everybody got real busy. And what we realized is, although we were trying to communicate through what we believe are now new traditional means of communication, whether it's Facebook, internet posting, media through like the different news outlets, we realized we were missing a segment of the population. So that's kind of why you may have heard me on Ray Gibson, Patty Arroyo. I'll go on probably, I think it's KUAM tomorrow and try and get this message out. And I'm going to keep trying to over-communicate. Although there will be that segment of society that just isn't going to want to listen. That's fine. I'm going to keep trying and not give up and make sure people have the information that they need. So the big message I have is, you know, we're still in a fight. And there's no doubt in my mind that this is going to be, as we've said in the past, it's going to be ongoing for a while until we sort this out at the base medical level, how to treat, how to inoculate, how to, what are the right vaccines, what are the right preventative measures, and then how do we live our lives in whatever this new normal looks like. So we're in a fight. It's a tough fight. It's a fight against something we can't see, smell, taste, touch, which is kind of scary if you think about it. But I'm confident that if we continue to work together, we're going to win this fight. So with that, the message to the greater community, as I've said, is, you know, my platform when I came into command was, I'm about the mission. It's all about the mission with me, and it's all about people with me. So mission first, you know, if you think about the old Navy Bupers moniker, it was mission first, sailors always. For me, it's mission and shipments. And that's the way I look at things in my job. With respect to COVID, Admiral Aquilino at Pacific Fleet and Admiral Davidson out at Indo-PACOM tasked us with, you know, take care of your people, don't be a vector for this virus into the civilian community, and then preserve your mission readiness. Not necessarily in that order. Those are the three big lines of effort. To date, because of our efforts with restriction of movement, quarantine, the people at the airports and at the Air Force Base when Patriot Express comes in, I think we're doing really well on that middle one, not being that vector into the community. We're grabbing people who we think are potentially ill or actually ill. We're doing quick contact tracing, we're quarantining, we're running them through the cleaning process, and boom, they go out the door and become part of the community again. On the first and third ones, which are protect my people and preserve mission readiness, those go hand in hand. And right now we're seeing a significant uptick of COVID positives on the bases. And this is not a value judgment, and this is not poking at any group when I say this, but the vector is from the location of off base to the location of on base. And remember, sailors, soldiers, airmen, Coast Guardsmen, Marines live off base too, and they interact off base, right, and they shop off base. So it's not civilians or non-DOD or whatever that's causing this. It's off base to on base, location to location. So we have to look at more restrictive measures. And right now, even though we haven't done anything that restricts access, if we can't slow this down, I'm gonna have to restrict access. We're locking down people inside the bases right now. We're preserving mission enclaves like the port, airfield, and communications station. But if I can't get this under control, if we as a community can't get this under control, people need to be prepared for control measures to separate populations, to limit close contacts, to try and cut this virus off before it stops operations at the port, comm station, and airfield. So that's kind of my message right now. We're not changing anything yet, but we might
have to. It's on the table.
Yeah, we have to think about these things. So,
right.
So that's my big message to the veterans today. Nothing's changed. There's no reason for runs on the commissary for water or you know, up at the Air Force Base for whatever you're looking for. The logistics lines are good. We restock throughout the day. But if we can't get this under control, we will have to do something. My intent, though, is not to disadvantage or advantage any one group. It's to be as equitable as possible and try and be as simple as possible.
Okay, with that, let me ask you a question. Obviously, you just said that there is not any restrictions going in place at the moment.
Correct. Nothing's changed since, you know, March, April, May. In fact, it's right. Kind of become less restrictive.
If, this is, I know you just love if questions.
Sure.
If you have to put the restrictions back into place, would it be similar to what it was before, where your active duty, DOD, essential people will have access Monday through Thursday, and the veterans will be Friday, Saturday, Sunday?
Yeah, we're looking at a couple different things, but believe me, because I'm a public school kind of guy, and I don't do math well, you know, I want it to be as simple as possible. So there's a couple different options, the ways you could do it. You could do it, you know, everybody has access every day except active duty and guard and mission essential are basically from 9 to 11. It's shut down for an hour for cleaning, and then veterans and retirees are from 12 till 1700. That's one model. Another model might be, you know, for let's use Naval Base Guam. Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday, it's active duty, mission essential kind of people. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, it's veterans and retirees. And those populations are separate. You know, those times are separate. So if a veteran shows up on a Wednesday, he's not getting in. But if an active duty shows up on a Saturday, he's not getting in. So, you know, we're trying to prevent the closeness, the smashing together inadvertently of populations to, again, stop the spread. Those are just options.
Right. Or lack of a better word, cross-contamination.
True. You know, you say that and that, you know, people get a little, could get offended because that implies an us versus them. That's not what we're looking for. I'm just trying to keep people separate. That's really what I'm trying to do.
Well, luckily, people get mad at me.
Yeah. Roger that.
I don't like having people mad at me, but you just don't want that crossing of the civilian sector being retirees, veterans, and your active duty. So just as you said, you have your three main things you have to take care of. Your people, your mission are being the most important, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, if we're not able to do the mission, why are we out here? What are we doing?
Right.
So it's got to be the mission. And to do the mission, our most important, most valuable weapon system is the people. So you got to have one to do the other. And I got to protect them. You know, we have expended a lot of effort, and Captain Grimes and his team at the base and General Sloan and his team up at Anderson. I mean, this is at the forefront of their day. Is how do we prevent people from bringing it to the island through DOD, and how do we then get those people into Guam, quarantine, ROM, all those things. So we're good on that middle vector, that middle mission. Don't make it worse. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, you know, protecting our people is starting to really become an issue. And that's not, again, I'm not pointing a finger or providing fault or any judgment on it. It is what it is.
Since you brought up General Sloan, since he took over about mid-month last month, correct?
Correct.
And you can tell me, take a swim if you don't want to answer this. That's fine. But I'm going to ask the question anyway.
Sure.
Since he took over command of Anderson Air Base, has the relationship between you and the Air Force gotten better?
Oh, you know, it's different. So I had a good relationship with General Boswell. We talked a lot and we saw things differently, as does I see differently things differently from Captain Grimes, as well as my own wife. You know, that's just the way it is. General Sloan and I are starting to work together more. You know, he is a incredibly intelligent man, incredibly well-spoken, a looks like a super leader. And so I'm liking working with him, and he's provided some input to me that gives me thought, you know, even though I've been here many times in a lot of years and I think I know what the heck I'm doing, he's definitely added value to our decision matrix and our calculus. So I don't think things were bad before. They're just different. So I hope that answers that question.
Well, like I said, you could tell me to go take a swim if you wanted to on that one. Is there, because I'm right now, the Air Force base is still limited to just Fridays and Saturdays for the veteran community and retirees. Has there been any talk between the two of you of opening it back up similar to what you're doing right now?
So to be perfectly honest, about 2 weeks ago, we were trying to get, so we were in HBCon Charlie, and the Air Force base was more restricted because of their mission set and their layout than the Naval base. The Naval base, because of the TR experience, probably was able to do things differently, and their base layout is different, further, you know, commissary exchange from the port than it is. It's right across the street from the airfield and those mission operations buildings at Anderson. And so we were probably within 2 weeks of opening things back up. And then on the 8th, 9th of this month, you know, civilian cases started going up. So
all hell broke loose.
Yeah, we're trying not to cause vertigo or confusion in the community. So General Sloan and I talked about it, and he said, hey, he wants to hold what he's got till we sort out what's going on as this spike happens. And I agree with that. You know, let's not change and become less restrictive in our control measures at a time when we're seeing things in the local community start to blossom in a negative way. So we're holding. I mean, I got to tell you, we were close, and unfortunately, things didn't go the right way.
And that kind of makes sense, because you don't want to lift all the restrictions and allow all the veterans and every full access like the Navy base is currently doing. And then 2 weeks later going, no, it's shut back down just Saturdays and Sundays.
So, you know, I think that was a good call by them up there. And Naval Base Guam had been opening services on base, like the Auto Hobby Shop and the MWR Marina. They were starting to open these things up, and they had to pause. And then we're going to have to probably close some of those things again as we see this outbreak accelerate. If we can get it under control, we can hold where we're at. If we can't get it under control, you know, we're going to have to get more restrictive.
And not that I'm trying to get all up in the business of what you do. I think sure. You're doing a great job. But how often are you having communications with the governor's team for the COVID?
Oh, at the staff level, probably multiple times a day. At the executive level, meaning me, the governor, lieutenant governor. Lately, it's been probably 2 to 3 times a week on the phone and WhatsApping and texting, you know, probably 4 or 5 times a week. So, you know, she picks up the phone and calls me at a moment's notice, and she has, you know, been gracious enough to allow me to do the same. And so we bounce ideas off of each other. So I knew we were going to PCOR 2 or 1 before it was announced, because we talked about it. When I said, hey, I'm going to hold where I'm at, because we're already more restrictive right now than where Gov Guam was at, she was good with that. You know, I constantly talked to her about, hey, these are the preparations we have in place to deal with the military, and then these are the preparations that we have in place should government of Guam request defense support through FEMA. And so she understands the posture. I'm constantly talking with her, and that's not just for COVID, that's for anything. So if it's a ship coming into port or it's a construction project, we're always trying to talk and be transparent.
And with the sudden increase over the last week and a half of COVID-19 positives on island, not just the military, but out the civilian sector as well, I know there's concern about Guam Memorial Hospital not having enough beds in their ICU. Is the team coming back to set up the mobile hospital down here at the school in APRA?
So not yet. And the reason for that is we haven't reached the triggers that the physicians team, the physicians advisory team, and the governor have decided when they call for that help. And there's plenty of reasons why that is. You know, they're working hard to expand capacity, both for acute care ward kind of beds and ICU type beds. You know, the nice thing we're seeing now that is different from March is, again, because of TR, and we've been through this a bunch, is we understand how to treat this better, what needs to be ICU, what doesn't. And so it's not a default to hospitalize immediately, but it's also not a take a lot of risk. So we have, I believe, four in the ICU at Guam Memorial, nothing over at Guam Regional Medical Center. We have a total of 14, including those four COVID-19 patients at Guam Memorial. Again, nothing at Guam Regional Medical Center, and nothing to date at Naval Hospital Guam. That doesn't mean that won't change tomorrow, but that's where we're at. So I'm watching those numbers very closely. And I'm in constant contact with also the forces that are kind of on be prepared to deploy orders to support the Guam in a DISC mission. I talk to them probably once a week, if not multiple times a week, with, hey, are you guys good? Are we still tracking? You still planning on coming? Who's the next guy in the chute? You know.
If that trigger has to be pulled, what's the lead time on getting them on island? What's the lead time of getting them on island? Then how much time, once they get on island, are they going to need to have that particular mobile hospital up and running?
So I've got guys on island that can put that hospital up, CB units that are specialized in putting that hospital up within the Santa Rita complex. We'll keep it within the fence line, so you won't see the big tent city because we're in typhoon season. So they could start putting up those beds and cots and medical equipment and have it up and ready to go in a basic fashion within 24 hours. The stuff's still postured there at Santa Rita. There's stuff postured down at Naval Base Guam. Now, what we would do is get local planners from Naval Hospital to come down and say, you know, put the X-ray machine over there, put the IV thing over there, because that's not in the CB's kit bag of how to do that. They can build stuff, but they need to know, have medical experts help them with that. As far as flying in people, that depends on where they're coming from and what kind of prepare to deploy order they're on. I will be on a conversation with U.S. Army Pacific on Monday with respect to, hey, who's ready to go and what's the timeline to get them out here. So when the bell rings and Gov Guam asks, and it pachinko balls through FEMA to DISCA to TGIFLIC, which is U.S. Army Pacific.
Right.
You know, when that all happens, at the staff level, we're trying to shorten the flash to bang time to make sure everybody's ready to go and come out here.
Okay, that's great. I know you were scheduled to come on. I don't know how much time you have for us tonight. Are you going to stay on for the rest of the show, the last half of the hour?
Sure. If you have people want to ask questions,
I'll open up for questions after we take a short break. But I just wanted to check with you. We didn't have a good time or good chance to talk prior to you coming onto the show, so I didn't know how much time you had allotted for us.
No worries. I got nothing but watching TV tonight. So
there's nothing on TV anyway. All right, Admiral, I appreciate that. So with that, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back right after that. This is Vet Talk on News Talk K57. We'll be right back with you.
When our soldiers return home, we honor them with a hero's welcome. But too often, these veterans are left to suffer in silence. Through the SSVF program, Westcare Pacific Islands can assist homeless veterans and those at risk of losing their homes. Contact Westcare today at 787-7965 or visit Westcare Pacific Islands on Facebook and Instagram to help restore honor, dignity, and hope for our veterans.
For over 100 100 years, Carrier has been cooling the world, and for more than 30 years, Carrier has served the community and has made Guam their home. You can count on Carrier to be here for all your air conditioning needs for the years to come. At Carrier, you can enjoy a rebate of up to $600 with GPA's Energy Sense program on our Carrier Infinity models.
This Buy Local message is brought to you by the Sorensen Media Group and Carrier Guam.
Call your Carrier man today and make your home feel right.
For more than 75 years, the VA Home Loan Benefit has helped millions of eligible veterans and service members achieve their piece of the American dream, a home for their families. Did you know that you could purchase a home or refinance your current home loan with your VA Home Loan Benefit? VA Home Loans have lower closing costs and generally enjoy lower interest rates than other borrowers. The VA Home Loan may save you thousands of dollars on your mortgage. For more information, visit www.va.gov or talk to a lender of your choice. Choose VA.
Viewpoint. What are your views on the issues that affect our island life? The coronavirus. Gov Guam. Political status. The military buildup. If you have a viewpoint that you want to share, send an email to viewpoint@pncguam.gov. Share your viewpoint.
News Talk K57.
The people and their safety is our number one priority.
Guam's number one talk station.
Back to Vet Talk on News Talk K57. My name's Sean Watson, member of the VFW. And in the studio, we have Isaiah trying to finagle this whole Zoom thing that we're trying to do tonight. How you doing, Isaiah?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Awesome.
Having fun. Having a great time. Right. And we have Admiral Mannoni. He's staying on with us for the rest of the show. Welcome back, sir.
Hey, thanks. I don't know if this will be good for ratings or bad, so we'll see how it goes.
You know, it's kind of funny because I actually put out over my Facebook that we weren't doing a show this week. Then after everything fell into place, I put another one out as an update going, no, the show's going on, and mentioned that you were going to be on the show as well. So at this time, I think we're going to open it up for some questions. So if anybody wants to call in and be a part of the show, have a question for the Admiral, our phone number is 477-5757 or *57 on your cell phone. During the break, Admiral, you and I were talking, and it seemed you have another message that you want to put out.
Yeah, so this is something that I think, you know, there's a lot of controversy over it, and a lot of people have opinions on it, but these are facts I gotta lay on some people. you know, there's discussions over whether masks work and whether physical distancing works on this, with this virus, with COVID-19. And I'll tell you, you know, if you use TR as the baseline, 4,800 sailors on that, potentially exposed, over 1,200 at the end were diagnosed as positive or tested positive. And we had those positives within the fence lines of Naval Base Guam, whether it was up at the hospital in the Guam High School gym, down on Naval Base in McCool and Charles King Gym in a big giant warehouse, climate controlled warehouse, or was up at Santa Rita Complex where, again, we've got the hospital standing by to be used if needed. And because leadership from that ship was basically trapped either on the ship or in some sort of isolation quarantine, you know, it was me and my team that had to be out amongst the sailors, calming them down, finding out what was going on with their lives, making sure they were getting fed, making sure that they had an outlet for any sort of issues, making sure medical was doing their jobs, making sure that they had some sort of recreation. And, you know, we wore masks. So I was in amongst for 3 months, in amongst 1,200 sailors who were COVID positive. I wore my mask, I wore my iPro when I was in close. And to date, I've been tested 4 times and not been positive. I don't know how many people can say they've been around that many positive patients. Captain Grimes was in amongst them every day, making sure that they had what they needed, and he was doing the best he could for them. Wore his mask, he didn't test positive. In fact, if you look at the 1,000 people we had working this problem, whether it was out in the Tumon hotels or on the bases or the transportation to and from or the medical checks, not a single person associated with the TR support mission tested positive. Now, you'll say, well, wow, that's amazing. How did that happen? It's because people physically distanced, they wore their masks, and they practiced good hygiene. If we do those things, we're going to beat this thing, no problem. If we don't do those things, we potentially, if we don't get sick, but potentially we become the vector to get somebody else sick. So that's my message to everybody. Simple things like that, continue to do them, we'll win this fight.
Right. And I just want to put out for our listening audience that when you say TR, you're referring to the Theodore Roosevelt.
Yes, sorry about that.
The carrier that came in.
Yes, sir.
That's fine. I understood it. But a lot of time, some of our listening audience, they get hung up on the acronyms and they're like, well, what does that mean? So I just wanted to make sure that I put that out there so they understood what we were actually talking about.
Well, that's good that you mention that, because I think the Theodore Roosevelt, or TR, or its nickname, the Big Stick, Teddy Roosevelt, so walk softly, carry a big stick, thinks of Guam as a second home. And I know there's a significant segment of the population here who thinks of the Theodore Roosevelt as their carrier. You know, Japan's got Ronald Reagan, Guam has the Theodore Roosevelt. So they're coming back. I don't know when, but they'll be back here.
Right. And just as a curious question, has all the sailors that were assigned to her that were left behind when the TR left the last time, have they left island and rejoined the ship?
Yeah, they left back in either late May or early June. And, you know, some of those sailors were still testing positive. I think the record I heard was one of the guys, a senior chief, who was the first patient that came off, was flown out in June with them on military air. He had been tested 18 times. So think about that, having that thing shoved up your nose 18 times and was still showing positive, even though he was clearly negative and not contagious. It's just the way this virus is. What they say is the broken down strands, the RNA, ribonucleic acid, if I remember my high school biology, those strands can be floating around in your bloodstream and still show a false positive months after you're actually over the disease.
Wow. All right. And I just want to recap some of the things that we talked about the first half of this hour. Is you wanted to come onto the show and basically let everybody know that even though with this big spike of everything going on, there is currently no plan to go into any type of restrictions for the big Navy base. So everybody still has the access that they currently have, and it's going to continue unless something happens and you deem that restrictions have to be put in place.
Yeah, so there's no plans to change it tonight nor tomorrow. I can't tell you what Friday, Saturday, Sunday brings. I really don't know. So every day, and my guys at the office hate me for this, you know, my sports page is the JIC release and the COVID numbers. That's what I'm looking at. And I'm looking for it to go down, to level off. And if it doesn't, you know, may have to put in more control measures. But like we talked about earlier, they're going to be equitable. It's not about veterans, retirees versus active duty, guard, reservists, or any of that garbage. It's about controlling access, controlling physical distancing, allowing populations to be separate so that we can preserve our mission readiness. It's about mission.
Let me ask you this question, because I drive by the big Navy main gate every day, twice a day.
Sure.
Going to work and then turn around going home. It seems that the traffic there has been backing up tremendously over the last week and a half.
There's been a confluence of events that have happened at the naval base. You know, there's construction projects to improve the force protection posture of that base. You couple that with, you know, health checks and those types of things that you have to do, where the guards are trying to do what they're supposed to do, the security forces, ensuring people have masks on, making sure that, you know, they're healthy. You add on top of that people who decide not to wear a mask and then decide to argue with the gate guard. So you got to turn them around and send them out. You know, the limited number of tourists we have here, don't make that left turn to go to Route 2 to go down towards Agate. They end up driving onto the base, and you got to turn them around. All that causes problems. And then if you need to do any sort of training, PowerPoint doesn't cut it. You have to do training at your post. And recently we had a couple of nights and afternoons where we were doing training at the post with the current security forces, reservists who have come in and augmented, auxiliary security forces that are helping out. And, you know, you just got to make sure people know what they're doing. So, yeah, it's a pain in the backside, but, you know, these are things we got to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just thought I'd give you an opportunity to address that, because I was going home the other day, and I swear the line, and I think the main gate was actually closed, so they were putting them all through the truck gate.
Yes.
But the line to get into that gate was backed up almost to Polaris Point.
Yes, I know, because it's a single lane gate. And then, you know, there's only so many people we have. I can't keep all the gates open all the time. You know, I got to allow people to sleep. And then, because this COVID thing is now affecting my security forces, it's entirely possible I have to start shrinking down what gates I allow access to, because I don't have the bodies to man them all. Because remember, naval base security forces man naval base proper, they man NAVMAG, they man NCTS, they man Flag Circle. They are also doing patrols amongst all those places. They're over at Polaris Point, the pipelines, you know. So it's not just the gate one, the front gate of Naval Base Guam, although that's the most visible part of their job right now.
Right, right. I understand that completely. You know, when I was active duty, I was Air Force, but when I was active duty, I'd say of the 11 years I was active duty, I'd say half that I actually worked with security forces.
Oh, so
I understand their mission.
I know you
completely.
Do. Yeah. You know, the other thing that causes problems, and again, I'm not giving you a tale of woe here, but it is something that the population can help us out with. You know, when a security force person says, hey, the gate's closed, you can't come in today, or you got to wear a mask, you don't have a mask, I need to turn you around, it does no good for anybody to beat that security force guy up. You know, hey,
he's,
I was an E9 back
in
work. He's following my policy. You want to beat somebody up, call us. Call JRM, and we'll talk you through it. And what happens sometimes, and we've seen this at the commissary exchange, people get fired up about not having access or not being allowed to go in without a mask or not wash their hands. And then I got to roll a unit over there to diffuse that situation at the commissary. That takes resources. You know, local folks have given me some great ideas about, hey, could you put up tents? Could you put additional lanes for people at the commissary or exchange? Could you do all these different things for the Manumco, for the veterans, for the retirees, for the active duty? Unlimited resources, I would love to. But none of those ideas come with resources behind them, either money or people. So I have to work with what I got. And Jeff Grimes is doing a great job down there trying to manage it. Nobody planned on a pandemic in amongst one of the most important exercise and evaluation seasons, which is the summertime. So it's
right.
We're working hard to make it work for everybody.
Let me ask you this. This would be a good question to put out because you just hit a couple things. What are the rules to get on base? Wear your mask.
So got to have a valid ID. So you got to either have, you know, your active duty ID, your retired ID. They've got to be valid. If you don't have that, you have had to go through the visitor center to get something that allows you on base. When you come on base, you're at those gate guards, and I don't have the rules written down here in front of me. This is the same thing I have to do. They make me roll down my window, present the ID, they scan it, see if I'm, got any warrants out for the Admiral's arrest. And they're looking at me, and I've been called on it. They're like, hey, sir, do you got a mask? Yes, I do. Can you please put it on? Absolutely, happy to do it. Oh, I forgot, sorry. So I throw on my mask. Then they'll look and see if my partner, whoever's riding with me, do they have an ID, do they have a mask? Then they're gonna check in the back seat of the vehicle because unfortunately we've had some people who've tried to sneak people onto base space in the back seat or the trunk. If you do those things and are polite, you're gonna have no problem. If you don't do those things, they're gonna just turn you around. And if you get abusive with the guards, then you're gonna get barred for a minimum of 30 days. We're gonna start with that and just up that ante, because those guards don't deserve that. They don't deserve to be abused. And it causes a ripple effect where you see the traffic getting all the way out to Polaris Point. Or up at Anderson, sometimes it was coming all the way down Route 1 towards the Blue Church, Our Lady of Lourdes. So, if people just are polite and try to comply with the rules, it'll be no problem.
I'm actually surprised we haven't gotten any phone calls. I figured they knew you were on, they would blow the phone lines up.
Hey, I'm okay with that. Some other things to talk about if you want. So, under P Corps 1, the other day I got asked by Patty Arroyo, I think, or maybe it was Ray Gibson, about military construction on Island. And there's a lot of swirl around the Defense Posture Realignment Initiative, DPRI we call it, or as people here know it, the relocation of Marines from Okinawa to Guam.
Right.
And, you asked earlier about talking with the governor. And so the governor, when she said, hey, I'm going to get more restrictive, I'm going to go to P Corps 2 or 1, she hadn't decided at that point. And she goes, and this is what I'm going to do, but I'm not going to shut down construction. And that's an outgrowth of our relationship that I believe her and her staff really understand that this military construction, because of the way budget cycles are, because of the H-2B visa things, which we've been working really hard, because of cost and schedule, has to continue. And as long as we, work hard to keep people quarantined and ROMed and safe and tested and all of that stuff, the military construction is a benefit to the local community, either through jobs or tax revenue. And sure. So, there have been calls by certain segments of the society to stop construction because of cultural remains or environmental damage. And I'd like to put out, again, I've said it many times, we comply strictly with the programmatic agreement, and we work all the time, every day with the SHPO, the State Historic Preservation Officer, and the local government of Guam. And so we do micro pauses. We're always stopping construction. I always get these calls, or these, we call them commander's critical information reports, where they say, hey, we found this over here. We don't want know what it is. It's a UXO, unexploded ordnance. It's a, you know, species of animal we've never seen before. We're going to stop doing what we're doing here. We're going to get the right people out. We're going to understand it. We found something that looks like a bone fragment over here. Okay, we're going to stop construction, cordon that area off, and we're going to study it and try to understand what's there. And then in consultation with the SHPO and in accordance with the programmatic agreement, we're going to figure out what to do in that spot. So people call for us to stop construction. I think they think it's this monolithic, John Mononi is going to stop construction everywhere. If we do that, we will unhinge all these different budgetary programs and will cause severe damage to cost, schedule, and take away revenue that you know, this community, we all need here. We need the port fix, the wars over at NEMA and X-ray. We need that medical clinic down on Naval Base Guam. We need a place to house the Marines. Those Marines, those 5,000 Marines, 1,800 roughly permanent party, 3,200 episodically, need places to stay. If we force them all on the economy, that's going to drive housing prices up. People aren't going to be so we need to house these guys. You know, so there's a lot that goes into when somebody says stop construction. You know, that's a big ask.
Right. You know, I'm actually glad you brought up the build up for the Marines, because that is something that I actually wanted to get into the last time you were on the show. But the question I have is with the COVID-19 and everything, is the work of the construction and everything, is it falling behind schedule? Is there a problem? Because you mentioned the H-2B visas. I know that has been moving forward. With that being moved forward, are we getting those workers? Are we still behind what we should be for schedule with the micro pauses that you had just discussed?
So yes and no. Some places we're ahead of schedule, some places we're slightly behind schedule, but all in all, we're proceeding, we're on schedule for Marines. And I think what we've been advertising is the first half of the 2020s, which is sometime in 2024, we'll see those folks show up here, the first echelon of folks. You know, the hangars are being built. There's one hangar built up at Anderson. There's another one it's going up faster than, you know, it looks like a weed. It's going up so fast up there. They're working hard on the first two projects. The barracks projects at NCTS have been awarded. That's on an area that's been, you know, no human remains, no explosives, no nothing. That's nowhere near Magua or any of these other sites. That is, those have been awarded, I believe, and those are going up here soon. And it takes a while to do those things. So, you know, long answer to your question, we're on schedule. The biggest detriment to schedule was actually trying to understand what the unexploded ordnance, or we call them munitions of explosive concern, MAC, you know, what the process is and how much of it that is in the ground. Daily, I get calls about some shell they found somewhere, something that looks like a shell. All that takes time, cost, and effort to deal with. So we think we've got a good process there, and I think we're going to stay on schedule.
All right. That's great. A question that I have heard out in the veteran community is, with the increase of Marines coming on, you said the permanent parties will be somewhere between 1,200-1,300, then systematically or periodically the other 30-something hundred would cycle through. Is there a plan on the during the build up to add another commissary or exchange?
Ooh, off the top of my head, I don't think so. Not in the first half of the 20s. Something may happen later in the 20s, like 2028, 2029, you know, as we see what's going on. But unfortunately, expanding the commissaries or building these things is a result of demand. So if we see an increase of demand, that will drive us to build something else. You know, if we see the 5,000 Marines are putting an undue strain on our two major commissaries here and exchanges here, then we'll look to build something else. I think that's how that program goes.
Okay, we actually have a phone call, so we're gonna go to the phone lines. And Tom, you're on with Vet Talk. How you doing?
Good, good. How's it going, Admiral?
It's good, Tom. Are you the one listener to me tonight?
No, I have a gut feeling a lot of people are listening to you because you do a pretty damn good job at it.
Well, thank you for that. I appreciate it. I hope you're feeling well and you're safe.
Oh, yeah. I'm ready to go. I have a question, and you probably may not know the answer. And, Sean, if I'm wrong, please correct me. But it's my understanding that NAVFAC is going to do the drawings for the addition to the CBOC clinic. And I was wondering, have you heard anything about that? Or maybe you could, make a few phone calls and get some information on that and, give it,
what's the CBOC?
Let me take this over real quick. I'll clarify
okay,
it for you,
Admiral. You know what I'm getting at.
I do, Tom. I sure do. Okay, by the way, that's Tom Devlin. Okay. Yeah, that's Tom Devlin. That's my producer right there for the show.
Okay.
He's the overall guy for the show. What he's talking about is the community-based outpatient clinic up right outside the Navy base or the Navy hospital gate for the veterans, the VA. Okay. What happened was they were actually supposed to break ground to expand that January last year, but there's still no designs being done. And the last council meeting I was on with VA Pacific Islands, they said that they're waiting for NAVFAC to do the designs for the drawings.
Of course, it's all NAVFAC's fault. And so, I blame NAVFAC for most of the world's ills also, because I love Captain Turner, who just left, and Captain Libertor. They're super guys, and they got a real hard-working team, so I give them a hard time. I don't know is the answer, but I'll tell you what. We're taking this down as a request for information, and whether it's the Veterans Committee outreach meeting that we're trying to set up for later this month between me and the heads of the different veterans groups here on Guam, or the next time I come on your show, I'll have an answer for you, if that's helpful.
Okay, that'd be great. And I'll tell you what, I'm gonna give you an open invitation that you can come on the show anytime you want to, and you have the phone lines in, or the phone number into the studio. If not, I'll give it to you. Anytime you want to put a message out and we're on the air, all you have to do is pick up that phone and give us a call.
Well, I appreciate that. Being that, I'm geo-batching right now because of the COVID, and my wife's stuck in the States with the kids. My Wednesday nights seem remarkably free.
All right, Admiral, we have about a minute and a half left in the show. You want to recap anything before we actually come out?
Yeah, so I'll just go back to the beginning real quick.
60 seconds.
Mission first for me. Taking care of our shipmates is the second and equally important priority. The three big ones here, lines of effort during COVID, were protect our sailors and their families, don't be a vector into the community of COVID, and then protect mission. We're doing good on the vector. We're not so doing so good on the protecting sailors, which could affect mission. And that means while we haven't changed anything today, or I don't plan on changing any access tomorrow, it could happen. We're going to be as equitable as we possibly can. And then finally, simple things. Wear your dang mask, physically distance. It worked for me with all those TR sailors. It'll work for you so you don't end up in the hospital. That's all I'm asking.
And don't beat up the guards at the gate.
Absolutely. Right. Those young men and women are just doing their jobs.
I appreciate you giving us an hour of your time tonight. A very, very good message you put out. My name's Sean Watson. This has been Vet Talk on News Talk 857. Hopefully we'll be back on the air next week somewhere. Thank you, Admiral.
Thanks, Sean. Have a good evening.
Exercise your brain. Stimulate those waves. KGUM AM. Hagatnya Guam. News Talk. K57. News Talk. K57.